It is, you are the appellant, and we have reviewed and researched your information, and we are ready to proceed. As you know, you have 15 minutes. Do you desire to reserve any type of rebuttal time?
Yes, I'll reserve 5 minutes.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Sherry Mack Jones from the law firm, and I do represent the appellant, Mr. Antonio Morris, in these matters of charges arising out of Northampton County. May it please the court. This case stems on sufficiency of the evidence as well as whether or not it was proper for the motion to suppress to be denied. And of course, Mr. Morris, at this point, he requests the court to vacate his conviction for the possession with intent to distribute heroin and the eluding, and of course to reverse the trial court's ruling. The trial court erred by finding the evidence sufficient to convict Mr. Morris of the possession with intent to distribute, as well as it was insufficient to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he had possessed the heroin. As is the standard, of course, that does the Commonwealth, they state that proof by circumstantial evidence is insufficient if it only engenders only a suspicion. In this case, of course, the facts, if we relied upon the Commonwealth, is all circumstantial. And, of course, one particular note of evidence is not sufficient in looking at the totality of it. The Commonwealth, when it relies on the circumstantial evidence, it must exclude every reasonable hypothesis of innocence. Of course, here, Mr. Morrison contends that there is, of course, a hypothesis of innocence. And, you know, there are a lot of things that are not present in this case. Evidence that connects Mr. Morris to the drugs. In the facts of this case, Mr. Morris was heading southbound on Route 13 towards the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel. Officers Pike, Bailey, and Lewis, they were sitting in the roadway of Route 13, as they indicate in the record interdiction, and they thought that Mr. Morris was a good car. And of course, going down, Mr. Bailey decides to follow Mr. Morrison, and once he runs the place, he indicates that the car was towed at impoundment in Richmond, and that was what was showing when he had followed him. After the stop, of course, based on the record, as he read, Mr. Deputy Lewis and Pike came to the vehicle while Bailey was researching or investigating the sufficiency.
Counsel, this is Judge Frank. Doesn't the officer have a duty to try to resolve the conflict between the receipt and the police record?
Well, to the extent, according to the record, after he had stopped Mr. Morris did produce the receipt as well as the valid registration, and Mr. Bailey did go back. I would concede that, yes, there is a duty. However, he went back to the vehicle for a period of time to research that information. Dispatch indicated it was still impounded. However, there were no reports of the car being stolen or anything indicating that it was otherwise just not being updated from the day before. Mr. Morris had...
Excuse me, this is Judge Maldo. Actually, didn't dispatch indicate they were trying to get the tow company on the line? So it had not been resolved by the time Officer Pike had moved towards the car to try to do the dog search, the scent.
Correct. I'm not saying that it was resolved by getting actual contact with the tow company. What I'm stating is that at that point in time, Deputy Bailey had the evidence from Mr. Morris, and he had the evidence from the dispatch indicating it was still showing impounded, but the car was not stolen, and that at that point in time, there was no contact with the tow company. They couldn't get him on the line.
But your argument is, correct me if I'm wrong, it's Judge Frank. Your argument was, after the police saw the receipt, any reasonable suspicion vanished.
Well, I would say not just in seeing the
receipt.
My position would be not just with them seeing the receipt, but going back to dispatch and with one, them indicating they couldn't get the tow guys on the line, but then two, that there was no report of a stolen vehicle.
So would you agree with me that the traffic investigation had not been concluded when the other officers approached and asked about drugs? Wasn't that investigation still ongoing?
I would say ongoing at that point in time for a reasonable amount of time.
Okay, thank you.
going back to the facts, dealing with the sufficiency issue, once the Mr. Morris had pulled off, according to the record, he did go down South 13 and then make a U-turn to go on Route 600. With the sufficiency argument here, what actually was the circumstantial evidence not showing that Mr. Morris had possessed the drugs? The Commonwealth relies on the circumstantial evidence that there was a brief period of time when, and the facts are disputed as to this, whether or not Mr. Morris fishtailed making that left-hand turn, but there is other evidence indicating that Deputy Bailey, who indicates he followed him closely, that he did not see Mr. Morris, one, throw the drugs out, and then, two, make any movement from the driver's side to the passenger side. At that point in time...
You do acknowledge, though, that aside from that brief moment where he lost sight of the passenger side of the vehicle, that there were drugs found in the area that the vehicle sort of fishtailed. Would that be a correct assessment of what the record indicates?
That would be a correct assessment of what the record indicates. Correct.
Would you also indicate, though, that when the drug dog hit on the glove compartment and the driver's side door after the flight, that would also be reflected in the record and something that the trial court could consider?
That is reflected in the record, and of course the court has to consider that evidence.
As well as the flight, would that be fair to say?
Correct, yes.
So I guess what I'm asking, in combination, what is it in terms of what the record reflects based on those factors, would you say was not sufficient? Because we have to look in the light most favorable to the counsel.
And looking at in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, just the indication that you've indicated the dog acknowledgement as well as the particular area. However, there are no other indicators that it actually belonged to Mr. Morris. In his testimony, of course, and looking at evidence most favorable to the Commonwealth, Mr. Morris does testify that it did not belong to him.
Counsel, this is Judge Frank again. Correct. I'm going to recite some facts. You correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
The glove box was open when the police stopped the car. Is that correct?
Correct. According to the testimony of the officer.
Right. And that the front passenger window was up, but when finally stopped, the window was down. Is that a fair statement?
Correct, according to the testimony of the officer.
Okay. And then the black bag sitting in a ditch, the bag was not covered with any dew despite the morning hour. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And that the bag contained 400 hits of heroin.
Correct. That's outlined in the record. Agreed.
Okay. Thank you.
And so, for time's sake, going over to understanding, those are all facts that the court had to consider. Although circumstantial, and looking at the facts most favorable to the Commonwealth, we still can see that that was not sufficient. As it relates to the trial court and the motion to suppress, Mr. Morris, we are arguing that the trial court did err when denying his motion to suppress because he was a seized. And, you know, a seizure that's lawful is a subject to violate the Fourth Amendment if it matters execution of a ruling infringes interest protected by the Constitution. Excuse me. So, according to the record, the officers testified that they were sitting at the highway looking at vehicles. And when Mr. Morris did come down, they indicated that would be a good one to take a look at. And then following down through the course of events, Mr. Deputy Bailey following the vehicle and ultimately running the tag, again, we just argue that at that point in time, with him stopping the vehicle, Mr. Morris producing evidence to show that it was his rightfully owned vehicle, he had gotten the vehicle out of the tow yard and paid the receipt and was able to have the vehicle at that point in time. We are arguing that the amount of time taken to do so
Let me stop you again. This is Judge Nalva.
Right.
What you're indicating is in terms of the stop being impermissible at that time. No drugs are found on him at that time, correct?
Correct.
So So what's the implication in reference to any type of violation? Where's the seizure?
The seizure would have been when he had stopped and Bailey had went back to his vehicle to investigate the tow, or the impoundment rather, in Richmond. And then at that point in time, when Pike and Lewis came up to the vehicle, there was a brief conversation, and then Lewis and Mr. Morris investigated over what type of conversation they had as far as whether it was an argument and the emotions in that, the period of time that it took to sit there while Bailey was in his vehicle.
Right, but there was nothing seized. So I'm asking, where is essentially the sort of the fruit of the poisonous tree, so to speak? There was nothing seized from that. If we assume what you're indicating is true, what was seized?
Well, at that particular period of time, nothing at that point. We're arguing that the drugs that were ultimately found in the ditch would be the inappropriate seizure.
Okay, thank you.
And I believe that would be my time. I'll reserve the rest.
Thank you, counsel. You will have a little over 4 minutes for your rebuttal. Mr. Campbell? You may go forward.
Okay. May it please the court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. I'll begin with the stop. Our position that the stop was not impermissibly prolonged. The Rodriguez case holds that a stop is illegal if it's only prolonged into unrelated matters. And the mission of this stop was to verify why this car was still listed in the police database as impounded. And the officer, who didn't have his reading glasses, needed to go back and look at the information that the defendant had given him, including the towing receipt. And so the officer went back, his license registration, towing receipt, had called dispatch to verify this information. This all occurred about at most a minute before the defendant had taken off and fled from the police. And it was our position that the reason for the stop had not concluded and so it was not an illegal seizure at that point. Moving on to the sufficiency, the court is well aware of our position and our laundry list of circumstantial evidence in this case. So I won't walk through all of them, but I will highlight a couple that have been mentioned today by Judge Frank. One of which is that the passenger window was up during the initial stop and down when the police actually stopped the vehicle. And then the other is that the drug dog alerted to the passenger side of the vehicle and also the glove box, which happened to be open. I think both of these facts are a unique set of circumstances, and unlike other cases like Craig, they are part of a chain of circumstances. I'm sorry, was there a question?
I didn't hear any.
Okay, I thought somebody interrupted. Okay, but as I was saying, both of these are part of a chain of circumstances. We have the defendant who is talking to the police, and they are telling him that there's going to be a drug dog circling his car. He is physically nervous and wants to call his lawyer, so then he flees and he proceeds into a high-speed chase. At one point there is a car, the police can see him, but then at one point they lose sight of the passenger side when he fishtails at a 90-degree turn, and then the police find, lo and behold, 400 hits of heroin right at that 90-degree turn, within 5 or 10 minutes after the stop, and they're as has already been mentioned, there was no dealer dust on that bag of heroin. The defendant, he testified in this case also that he did not possess the heroin, which the trial court rejected his testimony. In his opposition, when you look at the totality of the circumstances, the trial court was not plainly wrong in convicting the defendant of possession that the these facts and circumstances are just too great, and they add up to a sufficiency of the evidence being correct in this case. And unless the court has questions, I will conclude my argument.
I have none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
I was just going to say I hope Ms. Jones is doing better from her accident.
And do we all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Campbell. Ms. Jones, you may have the rest of your rebuttal time. Ms. Jones?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. I would just reiterate to the court, Your Honor, with the alternative hypothesis, understanding what the circumstantial evidence has been shown in the record, we would just reiterate the argument, Your Honor, that with the totality of the circumstances, there are still items that are missing. And with that, I would conclude my argument that there is still not sufficient evidence, as well as the motion to suppress should have been denied.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Jones?
I just wanted to tell Ms. Jones that I hope you are doing better and recovering quickly.